have a good time. Put a smile on your face, yeah. KBKM and Elation Radio. Even brighten your day and help you through the night. Bring you good music. KBKM and Elation Radio. And here's your host.
Now for the summer session. We are currently in the spring session now, So go out there. It's the yellow flyer that says summer, and you can register your girls, your nieces, your sisters, your friends from the ages of 10 to 19, and make sure you fill out the information that is on our website. Ladies, 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 and gentlemen, our first annual fundraiser for this year, the Many Shades of Chuck fundraiser. We want you to come out. We want you to get your tickets. This is a fundraiser. It is going to be June the 11th, and it's from 2 to 5. It is at the 417 Adams Street Mansion in downtown historic Ferguson. It is a beautiful, beautiful. You will not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed. We want you to come out. We're going to have live music. We're going to have food. We're going to have comedy. We're going to have gift basket drawings. We're going to have all these just nice things. We're going to have success stories, domestic violence success stories to share, and to share with you what Jonathan is doing in the community and how you can be a part of it. We are asking you to get your tickets, come out there and put your shades on and put on whatever color tuxedo shoes you have on or you have at home. You can dress it up or you can dress it down, but come out and be a part of this. The tickets are $25, and your money is going to help us with what we're doing to help women in the community, okay? Also, we want you to keep this on your calendar. Mark it. October the 8th, June 11th, registration for this race will be open and begin June the 12th. But I want you to put this on your calendar because we're going to be looking for you to come out and participate. We're going to be looking for you to volunteer. We're going to have bounce houses. We're going to have all these things, all these vendors out here and other agencies that's going to provide free services to help you and your loved ones. So I want you to make sure that you mark this on your calendar, okay? Thank you for those announcements. So for more information with resources and questions you do have, you can also go and visit our website at jonathan.org. where you can look at all of the things that I had just posted and some things that's out there that I haven't shared just yet, but it is on the website for you to review. So tonight, I put out there that I want to talk about, I ran across a story on the news feed on the website today, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and it is something that is very much needed in any community, in every community. And it's about examining police response to domestic violence. And in this particular case, I may and I may not call the police department because they are working on it. But, however, this can happen in any police department. So I just want to share and so call the police because she was in distress. She called the police and she said that her boyfriend was beating her, that these were her words. This was the language that she used. She said that her boyfriend, her abuser, had guns, and she was afraid. And so she did call. She did her part. She called 911, and she told them this scenario. And so the young lady, her name was Deborah Sayon, 32, and I'm going to go and tell it. It was in Columbus, Ohio. So she did tell the Columbus, Ohio Police Department that she feared for her boyfriend. She feared for her life. During this telephone call or this interaction between her and the dispatcher and policemen, it also has been noted in court documents, court filed documents, that she stated that she was fearful of her boyfriend, that he had guns, and she was afraid. So all of this stuff was documented, you know, on many occasions. So this is not something that she just happened to call on the phone and say this. But this has been documented down through the many occurrences that she's had experiencing this abuse at the hands of the abuser. And so she told them that. And so during this time, this last particular time, she said it again. I'm afraid for my life. I'm fearful. I'm afraid of him because he has guns. He has guns, you know. And we're not going to get off into the gun laws and stuff. We know how, you know, that goes. But at the point when she told them that she was afraid of her life and that they had guns, five police officers investigated her call. They came out. And when they came out on the distress call, they spoke with her and the boyfriend. His name was Marco Solis. And the police found a gun case and magazines for the ammunition at the residence, but they ain't find no gun. Saying where there's smoke, there's fire, right? Okay, so if you see a gun case and you see a magazine for ammunition, there is a gun somewhere. Even whether you see it or not, it's somewhere. Because why would you have those things if you don't have the gun? You know, common sense. I don't know. Whatever reason why they didn't, they overlooked it, or it wasn't a red flag for them, I have no clue. And so, again, the five officers, they did respond to her 911 call, but they did not take any action. Any action with this person. They did not look for the gun. They did not locate the gun. They did not make any arrests. They did not get details on the abuse at that time. They didn't do any of those things. They didn't pull them out of the house. They didn't separate them, say, hey, go somewhere and cool off or take her out the house or call somebody. They didn't do any of those things. They just left. And they didn't make not one arrest. Mind-boggling to me. You know, I know people err, people are human and stuff, but for all five of y'all, come on, somebody, something didn't click out of one of y'all? Really? Five men came to a call on a domestic violence call with a woman who said that her boyfriend was beating her. It has been noted in several court documents that he has beaten her. He's always said that he has guns. It is noted in the court documents that he has guns in the house. Five of you all, five police officers, go to the house. They didn't do anything. They didn't locate the guns. They didn't look for the guns. They didn't make any arrests. They didn't do any. They didn't get any details about the abuse. They didn't talk to him. They didn't say nothing. They didn't separate folks. They didn't leave. They didn't do anything. They didn't say, go somewhere, go to your mama house, come back tomorrow. What if they said nothing. They did nothing. They just left and did not make a arrest. So if she said she beat you and you went 911 call and it took five of y'all, what? Why did it take five of y'all to go over there and, what, case the area and then leave? What? I have no clue. I can't even figure it out. Make it make sense. It ain't making sense to me. Why? Five of you all had to go to this woman's house. Y'all got guns. Y'all have guns. They went to her house and did nothing. Saw the gun case. Saw the magazine to put the bullets in. But because you didn't see the gun, you ain't do nothing. Make it make sense. Somebody help me. Help me. I don't know what was going through their minds during this time. I just don't know. I don't know. The next day, after she called them, they went to see what was going on. They saw the gun case. They saw the ammunition. They did nothing. They left. So what they did, they left her there with him. They left her there with the abuser. They left her there with somebody she already told them that she was afraid of. He had guns. They left her there. Folks, you know the next day, Solis, the boyfriend, called the police the next day and said he had shot that woman. He shot her. He killed her. Today he is currently in jail awaiting trial murder. I don't know what was going on here. I don't understand this. She did what she was supposed to. She reported it. She called in. but yet y'all left. Now, I just don't know. I probably would have been afraid. I was like, you know what? I'm going with y'all. I don't know. But then my thing is this. Maybe she felt like she couldn't have said anything to them because she called them. They came, they looked around, they saw, and they left, probably like, okay, well, I can't go with them because they didn't do anything. Now the next day, not even 24 hours, this man calls the police and tells them he shot her. He killed her. So this is just, it's so many travesties. It's so many travesties. But this is the one what the lady, she was very explicit on the phone when she was explaining to the dispatcher that she was being abused. And yet, the officers who answered the call didn't pick up on any red flags at the time. It almost makes you go, guns. And you see the ammunition case, the magazine, and you see a gun case, and you already know that there's abuse at this house. And this woman already called you and told you she was afraid and he had guns. How about that be a red flag? Isn't that a red flag enough? I don't understand. I'm not understanding this story. I'm not understanding it. And so, you know, mind-boggling, because I have read that this particular police department has a pretty robust infrastructure around domestic violence. I've read that, and they have a specialized domestic violence unit that handles felony cases, and they use cutting-edge screening tools to evaluate victims. And they even work with local advocacy groups who support the rise, they support rise on the judgment of the first responders and the patrol officers who are going to go show up at a survivor's home. They got all of this. They had all this in place, you know, the screening for the evaluation of the victim, handling domestic violence, handling the court case. They have the advocacy group. They have all of this stuff going for them, yet they failed in their judgment. How do you have all this training and you go to this house when this lady's telling you she's afraid and he has guns and you see the casings and you walk away and leave her there and the man, but yet 24 hours later you get a call that the man had called and he done killed the woman? Yeah, some heads go roll with that one. So you know the lady's mama, she sued the city and the first responders who were involved. You know, that has got to be heartbreaking to know that your loved one reached out for help, did the right thing, did what was required or what was expected, that you yet somebody dropped the ball in a catastrophic way. Catastrophic way. It says the officers failed to share several pertinent details of what they saw at the residence. Why didn't they share it? I don't get it. Including the gun case in the magazine. I don't get it, folks. I know we all human, but when you train for stuff, you know, something should kick in. Maybe we need to read, and that's why I'm going to talk about this training, because that could happen here. That could happen across any police department, not only in the United States, abroad, across other countries. It can happen anywhere. That this happened to this young lady, that they failed to see the red sign, shared that they saw the gun You know, I don't know. That's why I'm wondering, is there more to this story? Was this person a police officer or you know, I don't know. What is there? Is there some kind of connection that has not been shared in this story that we don't know about? Because I just cannot see somebody should have picked up on something. Wait a minute, y'all. Hold up. What's going on? This something ain't clicking here. All five of them left this lady after she called and shared all this with and was explicit in her conversation on the phone. And yet all of you all go to the house and leave him there and leave her there and don't make no arrest. Regardless whether we've seen her or not, the travesty is gone. The lady is gone. The lady has had to bury her daughter. That is a travesty that she had to deal with that. And she has to deal with that and live with that boy every day of her life because somebody did not see the red flag. And so this highlights the need to bring awareness to resources for victims of domestic violence, but it also raises awareness on increased assistance and collaboration with advocates and local law enforcement and dispatch. Is it dispatch responders or dispatch? Yes, the first responders, the dispatchers, the law enforcement, everybody. Why? Because I've always said this. You know, when someone making a call, a domestic violence call to the police officer, they're calling 911, and that dispatcher picks up that phone, you have to make sure that you are being attentive, even not in your voice, but your tone, you know, because the person on the other end, if they're talking about they're in this abusive situation and they are afraid and they're calling or reaching out to get help, they are fearful. And so the way you handle them, you have to make sure that, or we have to make sure that we are not re-victimizing them all over again. I have heard too many stories, and I've had too many experiences with clients who have felt victimized by the two when they make that 911 call. Then when the police officer comes on the scene, the demeanor, the roughness, the way they're talking to them, the way they're questioning them. And I tell people all the time, a domestic abuse victim, they are watching, they are listening to how you respond. They are watching your facial expressions more so than what you're saying. They're looking at your facial expressions. They're looking at how you're going to respond. And if you don't respond to them right, it's going to either cause them to retreat or they're going to move forward. And if they retract that story or they retreat and they feel fearful, then that is a missed chance for them to get the courage to come out of their situation, and they end up saying, I cannot imagine, oh my God, this is just, this is just hard for me to even imagine how this woman felt when they left her there and they walked out. I just think, I'm almost in tears. I cannot imagine what went through her mind. I cannot imagine the helplessness she felt. I just cannot. And so we have to work with our law. How are you receiving the information when the person is calling you? How are you answering them? You know, are you being real methodical? Are you being as a matter of factly? Or you sound like you're reading a script and there's no compassion in your voice to make them feel like, oh, somebody is listening to me. Somebody can hear my hurt and my pain. Because you can tell on the phone when somebody is just being dismissive or not. And so we have to train and talk to our dispatchers, that first person that picked up that call when a survivor is calling them. How are you receiving that person? How are you receiving that information? Because that can be the difference between life and death, as we have heard in this situation. Mindy, how are you referring them? What are you saying? Okay, since we got to bring somebody, stay there, you know, I'm going to hang on the phone with you, give me some, you know, give. Hey, I'm going to give you a buzz, where I'm going to ask you about an ice cream, and you give me a flavor, and if you give me the flavor, I know something. We have to come up with something to help these women. This woman was failed on so many occasions. I cannot believe, I cannot even imagine what she said. What was her last thought before that man killed her? What were her last thoughts? It's just amazing. Not amazing in a good way. Amazing, like, so it's detrimental, you know, because I want to be careful. I choose my words. And of course, we know that police officers, you know, you're doing your duties as it pertains to de-escalating the situation. You know, of course, I'm not even talking about the law enforcement duties of it, because you pretty much, I know you have that down pat. You know what you're doing. I'm talking about the human part of it, the part of the advocacy part, the part of trying to help bring them out safely. This woman didn't get out safe. I cannot imagine the helplessness this woman felt when them policemen turned and left her there. Why you didn't the woman out with you? I just don't know. But we know, of course, this should not have happened. It shouldn't happen. I hope it don't happen no more. We can't afford to know or hear about cases like this. We just can't. We can't. And so we have to work with our law enforcement. They're human, too. They're fathers, they're sons, they're brothers, you know. They uncles. So they're human. We know they feel, and we know they have a duty. And, of course, we are upholding them. But in this particular case, these officers, I have no clue why they left that woman there with that man. And all five of y'all left her there with that, and he had guns. And then the man called you the next day and tell you he killed the woman? Come on. Come on. Avenue that we can travel. This is another place that we can venture out in, working closely with our law enforcement and our first responders and our dispatchers. You know, we're all in this together. We have to be collectively as a community. This is a community issue. So we have to work on this. So again, if you or someone you know needs help, we ask you to call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Or the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673. You can reach us at the Jonathan website or on social media, or you can call us at 1-800-296-145. You find resources in your state coalition's website, at your state coalition's website. Or if you're in another country, you can Google domestic violence hotlines in your respective. And I will leave you with this. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, says the Lord." This is what Jeremiah was saying, that God says, "I know the thoughts that I think towards you, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end." And I always say this, God wants to give you the end that you expect. Your end, if you remember, it is Jonathan, and Jonathan is a community-based organization. It is a global community organization. Therefore, you are Jonathan because you are a part of the community. Jonathan, 24/7, 365 days, all day, every day. And with that being said, I want you to be safe, I want you to be well, and I want you to be whole. Good night.
Good evening to our viewers of the newly launched podcast on Elations Radio, Jonathan Live. We have an upcoming event for girls between the ages of 13 and 19. It is Intro to Entrepreneurship.